Hey everybody, and welcome back to another week at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and Brooke is here. Woo-hoo. Because it's Monday. Yeah, and also because it's Monday, we get to deal with a whole bunch of BS that happened over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So some of it awful, more extremist violence, which we'll be talking about shortly, as well as the right's attempts to take the blame from where it belongs on right-wing extremists who are killing people all over the world, and then apply it to politicians they don't like. So we'll be breaking down those different efforts. In just a little bit, Damon Young is gonna be on to break down his new memoir and essays, What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. Very excited for that. And let's see, we've got Trump rallies, just lying and lying and lying.
Just so many lies.
But we're gonna commemorate his 10,000th fact-checked lie. So that'll be exciting. So we've got a little bit of that, including about some despicable topics. Beto O'Rourke has a plan. He has a policy, it's written down and there are details. And so we wanna be fair, and so we're gonna take a look at it. It has to do with climate change. We're gonna talk about that in a little bit. And then in the E block, I know that I said it would never happen again, and I know that you guys said it was for the best, but Ricky Strong is gonna be back on the show.
Oh, we love Ricky.
Donald Trump has a new favorite football player.
It's not Ricky.
It's not Ricky, obviously. but we're gonna be talking about that too.
Okay.
And so lots to get to, but let's start off with this. This weekend, on the last day of Passover, a synagogue in San Diego was the latest site of extremist anti-Semitic violence. And in this attack, a 19-year-old already in custody, by the way, I don't wanna give any more details about this person because of the fear of copycats. And it seems like this person was effectively sort of a copycat to other attacks from earlier this year. In any event, a 60-year-old woman died and three others were injured in that attack. We're still very early on in knowing really anything about who this person was, but from what is believed to have been his manifesto, it is clear that he is another white nationalist who despised people of the Jewish faith, believed crazy things about racial politics, echoed many of the talking points of those on the right that are very popular and very well paid to talk about the sort of stuff that just happens to be what a lot of crazy people believe. And so that is the person that is responsible, and we might know more eventually about their ideology. But to the extent that we know anything right now, I think it makes sense to focus on the person who did it. But not everyone is doing that. And already in the immediate aftermath of it, Meghan McCain was on the news. I don't know why, but she is. She's a person that people get opinions from now. And she wanted to make sure that you knew who was responsible for these sorts of attacks, as she makes clear.
I do think when we're having conversations about anti-Semitism, we should be looking at the most extreme on both sides. And I would bring up Congresswoman Ilhan Omar and some of her comments that got so much attention. And in my opinion, Nancy Pelosi wasn't hard enough in her response to her, you know, trafficking in anti-Semitic language, talking about all about the Benjamins and how Jewish people had hypnotized the world. So I think when you're talking about rhetoric and you want to talk about President Trump, and by the way, I agree that he needs to have his feet held to the fire as well, but we're talking about it on both sides of the aisle as well.
Well, they're trying to. They're trying to make it about both sides of the aisle. So we should talk about all the extreme on both sides. So we have right-wingers who are going into synagogues, mosques, and churches and killing as many people as they can, trying to start race wars. And then we have Ilhan Omar's comment. So the most extreme on both sides makes sense. We should divvy our time up 50-50 between those two things. And but can you really be surprised? I mean, it is again Meghan McCain. Nobody, including Meghan McCain, knows why she is now one of the leading voices in American political commentary.
Everybody,
but that's
knows
what you get. Well, we all know why she's there. Nobody understands why her view of the, like, why these anti-Semitic attacks are becoming so common now, why synagogues are being targeted so commonly, that she's the go-to expert for it. But when you go to a person like that with no call to be there in the first place, can you really be shocked that she tries to make it about something that it's not, about Ilhan Omar and her commentary that was critical of the ruling regime of Israel several months ago?
I also think, like, I wanna like always bring this up, especially when she brings Representative Omar up, that Meghan McCain has not apologized, not walked back her blatantly racist comments. When she sat there on national television and said, a black Muslim woman scares me. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. That's a racist trope.
Yeah.
That gets people killed
and
every day.
And she's continuing it.
It got a bunch of people banned from entering the country. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like that nasty racist trope. And she's perpetuating it over and over again. And I also find, I get it, the president is a Republican, but I do have a hard time both sidesing the president. Just because the president is here, there's just one president. There are no other sides. So the president is supposed to be held to such a stand. There is no other president. He's at the top of everything. He's the leader of our country. You can't both sides someone who sits at the top alone, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? So that's so weird. And she kind of minimized. And yeah, of course, I do think he needs to be held to the fire too. But it's important to know, it's important that the president represents everybody in this country. And he's not doing it. And it's irresponsible for her. They're talking about a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
yeah, and we are a couple of days off of Donald Trump once again defending the marchers who chanted "Jews will not replace us, bring on the ovens," and all of that.
Yay, Robert E. Lee.
There's no balance between these two things. Right. Yeah, and I want to briefly mention on that with Robert E. Lee. I forget exactly who it was, but someone on Twitter pointed out something great.
What did they say?
Where it's like, it's weird how the right wing media vacillates between one of two things. When you go to the commentators that like to bring on the writers and stuff, it's like one week it's, did you know that it was the Democrats who were the party in charge in the South when there was slavery? Did you know that they were the ones who were against civil rights? Did you know that they were the ones? And then the next week, Robert E. Lee was a great man. How dare you take down his statue? Well, decide, were you on, which side of the Civil War were you on there?
Right.
So you make it seem like it was the Democrats who were in the wrong 100 years ago, fine. But you're defending those same people right now. Pick a lane.
Yeah, and it doesn't, none of that matters. Like, what matters is that we're talking about like the 40s and 30s and even before that, the white people were in charge. That's not even they're like, focus on the right part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a bunch of racist white people on both sides of the aisle 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's supposed to be some enlightening experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what's important now is that one party looks like this and one party has lost it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One party is still trying to be back there.
And understand that Meghan McCain considers herself to be part of the rational side of that party.
Right.
That she's not one of the Trump people.
Right.
And yet, look at what effect she has on
politics.
She's
trying to protect us from the scaries.
Now let's move on to a related topic. Kellyanne Conway is still being brought on the news. I don't know why. I guess they got to fill slots. But Kellyanne Conway was there and she was talking about the recent basically anti-religious violence, because again, we are seeing it in churches, mosques, and synagogues. All seems to be white nationalists for the most part now. In any event, she had an issue with what we are talking about and what we're not talking about when that is discussed. And for some reason, even though she was being asked about Donald Trump's defense of white supremacists in the US, she decided to bring up AOC.
I see officials who get a lot of airtime and ink, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman, who tweets many times about the mosque and never once about the
Kellyanne, you brought up Charlottesville.
In Sri Lanka.
Okay, so Donald Trump, again, for 2 years now has been defending these white nationalists. Just a month ago said, it's not a big issue, it's not a rising threat, don't worry about it. Again, Donald Trump and his administration and the right-wing media in the wake of right-wing terror attacks become PR. For those groups, they are just trying to distract you from taking seriously the threat that is obvious to everyone who's watching what's going on around this country. And one of the distractions that she tries to bring up is AOC didn't tweet about this one particular thing, even though she tweets a lot. Now, by the time she went on the news to say that, we already knew exactly why AOC had not been on Twitter for those couple of days. We'll get to that in 1 second. But in any event, in reference to that video, Kellyanne Conway goes on Twitter and says, I was referring to AOC's silence about the Sri Lanka massacre of Christians, not Easter worshippers, as Obama and Hillary oddly said. Try listening before spewing. Well, we did listen. We know what you were talking about. And AOC responded saying, hello, Ms. Conway. On Easter, I was away from tech visiting my grandmother in Puerto Rico, which continues to suffer from the White House's incompetent disaster response. Are you trying to imply that I'm less Christian? What was the point of you bringing this up on national TV? Again, I think that might well be what Kellyanne Conway was trying to imply. They spent years trying to pretend that Barack Obama was not a Christian, that he was a Muslim. Why not AOC as well? AOC listed a whole bunch of the lingering problems in Puerto Rico, keeping to the policy, staying focused on that, and then says, the terrorist attack in Sri Lanka was horrifying, saying Easter worshippers matters because Easter is the holiest day of the year for Christians, and to be targeted on Easter highlights how heinous the attack was. Just as saying yesterday's San Diego shooting was on Passover, you are using this as an excuse to stoke suspicion around my Christianity and faith life. The Sri Lanka massacre was horrifying. No one should be targeted for their religion. If you're so moved, let's do more to welcome immigrants fleeing religious persecution. I have a feeling she will not be taken up on that offer.
At all, no.
No, but again, this is what they do. Whether it's Meghan McCain with Ilhan Omar or it's Kellyanne Conway about AOC, we have the same pattern plays out over and over and over again. You get a right-wing white guy between the ages of 18 and 28. He goes into a place of worship, he shoots it up, and then they go on the news to target a woman of color and say that they're the issue. Either they're to blame with Ilhan Omar, or why is it that they don't care enough? The problem is really with them. Isn't it odd how the strategy always seems to come back to that?
Right, that she didn't tweet. She's not the president. Like, people don't need to hear her say, hey, you matter. And it wouldn't matter about the president if he wasn't so anti-black and brown. Mm-hmm. Like, people wouldn't shine a light on, you know, what he responds to and what he doesn't if it weren't so clearly white.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing is ridiculous. And I hate when people have to defend their Christianity. Mm-hmm. Or their level of Christianity, or their faith, because there's such a thin line between being anti every other religion. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It just comes off. It puts people in a bad position because, like, when President Obama has to constantly defend the fact that he's a Christian, you know, you don't want Muslim people to be like. Does that make sense? Like, the point is that
it makes it a weird point of focus in American politics.
Yeah, he's not a Muslim. Well, it wouldn't be a problem if he was.
Exactly.
Wouldn't be a problem if she weren't a Christian.
But he cares about what is true, so he has to defend himself, even though it makes it seem as if he's defending himself against something that's bad, even though it's not bad.
Right, and her faith is important to her. It wouldn't matter, though, if she wasn't a Christian.
Exactly.
That wouldn't matter. This is America.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Yeah, and another way that it doesn't matter is look at how all of the right-wing Christians that are prominently in media and politics are responding to this. Doesn't seem like that's really helping.
Right.
If Kellyanne Conway takes it so unseriously as to go on the news and make it about AOC.
Lying is anti-Christian. Hello. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they seemed against it. Jesus wasn't a big fan. Also, not a big fan of guns, I would imagine. Okay, in any event, we do have to take a break. When we come back, author Damon Young is gonna be joining us after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Hey there, welcome back to the Damage Report with John Iadarola. He's hiding over here to my left, he's still here.
How's it going?
We are about to interview an author that I'm really excited about. This. His name is Damon Young. He started a website, Very Smart Brothers, and it's just, we were like scrolling through it this morning. It's awesome, and this book is even better. So good morning, Damon. Good afternoon, where you are. What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. This is your latest book, a memoir and essays. And I think it's fantastic. And we're excited to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so I've seen the book called An Authentic and Touching Example of the Black Male Experience. And as I was kind of reading it myself, I wanted to know why you wrote it and what you wanted readers to take away.
And so the book, as you alluded to, it's so much of the national conversation about race, about racism, about blackness, and even about black masculinity, you know, often exists at these very opposite ends of the spectrum, where you have this focus on this really like deep trauma, which is necessary because that exists, or you have this focus on like the black excellence. And my book exists in between, in the middle, where it's more of a dive into some of the angst, the anxiety, the absurdities, some of the levity and the comedy that spring from that, and also some of the darkness that springs from that too. And so I wrote the book just as a way to, I don't know, to, it was a form of catharsis and also a bit of a form of therapy, and also just to, I guess, provide a voice for that middle.
So I was reading about you discussing some of the ways that through the course of your life you've learned in your interactions with women. You talk about toxic masculinity, but you make very clear that it's not intending to show that you have moved past all of this and that others need to catch up, but that you're sort of showing how this is a continuing thing that we all need to focus on. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, we talk about toxic masculinity and rape culture, and you know, and I think that even with that term, the word culture maybe doesn't even go far enough. It's almost like an embryonic fluid that we're all like swimming in, mm-hmm. and like sloshing around in and drowning it too. And you know, I want to make certain that yes, those critiques matter, and that's a part of my work. It's a part of, I guess, just my maturity or whatever evolution. But I'm not done. You know, I'm not absolving myself from any acts or any feelings or anything. You know, when I'm critiquing masculinity, I'm also the harshest critiques are of myself, mm-hmm. because I just think that's one, that's the most authentic, and that's also the most effective, because you can't be like, oh, you guys are doing all this, or y'all. I mean, because I'm a part of it too.
Yeah. So I'm curious, I mean, obviously you've been a writer for some time. Some of the writing that you've done in the past has touched on some of these topics about your personal history and all of that. When you decide that you're going to put together this book, how do you both make sure that it's reminiscent of your past writing for the fans that you already have, distinct enough that it gives something to people who might have been following you very closely, that it's like simultaneously similar to but distinct from what you've done before? How did you manage that?
Went into this process with an audience of one, like myself. Like I wanted to write something that I wanted to read. and after I satisfied that, then I started to, I guess, extrapolate out into, okay, what are things that other people might get from this, or might feel, or things that might really land and resonate with people. But my primary focus, again, in talking about the genesis of this book, was to create something that I would have wanted to read. Something that I want to read now, and something that I would have wanted to read when I was 15 or 25, and wish that I could have had an opportunity to read when I was 15 or 25 or even 35.
Yeah. It's hilarious. I think it's so many funny moments in this, and it also gets, you know, it's sad, at least for me, at a lot of points too. I was curious. And not even about, you know, on the sad parts, just there were some parts that I laughed out loud at that I was shocked that anyone would, you know, say out loud or put in print. Was it hard for you to be this open?
Well, you know, I figured if I'm going to write a memoir, it has, like, this isn't Black Panther. This isn't like a superhero origin story. Like if I'm going to write a memoir, it has to be vulnerable. It has to be transparent. It has to be very self-critical. It also has to, you know, acknowledge some of those self-consciousnesses and anxieties and neuroses. And that's where I think the best humor in the book comes from, mm-hmm. where you're reading these things and you're like, oh, wow, this guy actually admitted this. Admitted to doing this thing or thinking this thing that, you know, I may have thought or I may have done, but, you know, I'm not actually going to put it in a book and distribute it to, you know, thousands of people. And so that part about that actually still scares me. Mm-hmm. Because it is so vulnerable, and knowing that people are going to read some of these vulnerabilities and talk about them and laugh at them, which is the intent, but it still is kind of scary.
Can we talk about Pittsburgh? We have to wrap up here in a little bit, but Pittsburgh is almost like its own character in the book. And I lived in Philly have never been to Pittsburgh. And so, I don't, and one of our one of my coworkers here, Skip, is from, I think, an area around Pittsburgh. So we always joke about, like, he's from, like, the country of Pennsylvania. But why was Pittsburgh such an important character in this?
Well, and before I answer that question, I again, I live in Pittsburgh. I've been to Philadelphia twice.
Okay, see, okay.
We just, you know, that's on the other end. Like, when people who aren't familiar with Pennsylvania bring up Pittsburgh and they say, oh, you mean like Philly? Toronto is a closer drive than Philadelphia is. Detroit's a closer drive, Kentucky. And so, yeah, I'm going to be in Philly this week. But anyway, Pittsburgh was and is a main character because it's just an essential part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, and I recognize that my story is a very Pittsburgh story. Some of the things that I talk about in the book, particularly the things that concern like some of the racial situations and the economic anxiety, are told in the Pittsburgh context and may not have happened the same way if I lived in a different city. Yeah. And also, too, I just thought that being more specific, even to the point of being esoteric, about my own experience and about my own home. And about my own like neighborhoods and life and background and everything, that's what people are able to relate to. Where even if they aren't familiar with Pittsburgh, they're familiar with the sort of reverence I have for those references. They're familiar with, oh, okay, even though I've never been to this neighborhood that he mentioned is similar to a neighborhood in Philly or St. Louis or wherever that you happen to be from. And so yeah, making Pittsburgh a character in the book was essential and intentional because, again, it's been a part of the making of who I am.
And the book is What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. Damon Young, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, some shocking claims from Donald Trump's rally over the weekend. They've been labeled inaccurate refrains by the New York Times. We're going to call them what they are, lies, after this. Donald Trump held big rallies over the weekend, and it became clear during it that he still has no connection to the truth, and the distance between him and the truth is growing vaster every day. And two, I think I'm beginning to get a better idea of his electoral strategy. So obviously, like, plan A is caravans, brown people are scary, you know, go with that. B is probably just, you know, appealing to white nationalists as much as possible. But I think C might be abortion. It's not something that he's talked about a lot in the past, but it does get right wingers fired up. And there's been a new form of lying about abortion that's become very common on the right over the past couple of months. And Donald Trump made a reference to these new theories about abortion. And here is a section of that.
The baby is born. The mother meets with the doctor. They take care of the baby. They wrap the baby beautifully. And then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby. I don't think so. Incredible. No, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible as in not credible as in can't be believed because it's utter nonsense. And yet, that is the president who can, like, anything goes. Anything goes. It doesn't matter. It's not like a lie isn't like misstating a statistic anymore or anything like that. It's not even being unfair to a person's argument when describing it. It's just make up whatever you want. And not a single person in that audience will check to see if it's true, cares whether it's true. The media is gonna do effectively nothing to combat the falsehoods. Like, yes, PolitiFact and Washington Post will give it, you know, 20 Pinocchios or thumbs down or whatever it is that they do. But even the New York Times tweeted, fact check, at a rally on Saturday in Green Bay, Wisconsin, President Trump revived an inaccurate refrain about doctors executing babies. If he says that his political opponents are swaddling toddlers and then executing them, that is not an inaccurate refrain. It is a vicious, disgusting lie. And the New York Times can't say that.
It's not even, by definition, it doesn't even make sense. Like, abortion, the definition is in the word abort, like abort mission. The mission is birth. Okay? So you can't have an abortion if a baby is actually born.
Yeah.
And then he is actually describing random murder and calling it abortion. That is not a thing.
He is
actually describing like what happens. He's describing murder.
Yeah.
And it just takes me back to they give it other words, so just to try and make it seem like it's not ridiculous. This was what Meghan McCain was talking about when she was screaming infanticide.
Yeah,
this is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy, and it's not based in anything. It's like, and I know that they don't care, and really they don't even need to go these lengths. They think that any abortion is the most horrific thing that you can possibly do. I get that, but that's not good enough anymore. That's not good enough to get their people out and to vote based purely on this, considering nothing else. They need something even worse. And so they've convinced themselves that now what a woman wants to do when she wants to have an abortion is she wants to be pregnant for 9 months, go through that entire thing, birth the child, wrap it, and then decide to kill it. That has no relationship with reality whatsoever, but that's what they're running on. I mean, I could just, like, you at home, just make up, what's the most ridiculous lie that we could try to win an election based on?
I can't think of anything like that. I don't think that racism is over. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one step worse than this.
I think of myself as a creative person. I can't, yeah, that's true.
It's a lie. I don't think, like in this mythical story, how do the doctors execute the babies? Like, do they use the electric chair?
Mm-hmm.
Do they use lethal injection?
There's no details because there's nothing.
Do they shoot them?
I don't know.
There are no details. And also, can we see that video one more time? Just not like just the video.
Just see?
Because I'm a child. The Blacks for Trump delegation is always like right in like view of camera.
Well, he's
bored.
Yeah, he's bored.
Like he's not, the president's talking about murdering babies.
Maybe he's fact checking it. Right? Maybe he's the one. Anyway, it's just like, yes, the lie itself is ridiculous, but my fear is that the media has not learned much from this last experience of covering Trump. And I know it's just one tweet from one outlet, but it is the New York Times. And if that is how they are going to approach these lies, like some are saying it's inaccurate, then I think that we're in for a really bad election. Now that said, I do want to move on to one other video though. Obviously a horrific shooting over the weekend, both the synagogue shooting as well as there was a mass murder, I believe in Tennessee as well. So, you know, it's America, it's a weekend, there's gonna be horrific shootings. It's a terrible reality that we live in. But in the wake of that, almost just a couple of hours later, take a look at what Donald Trump was saying at one of his rallies.
But while we are unleashing America's economic renewal, the new agenda of the Democrat Party, it's not the Democratic Party, it sounds better. They ought to change their name, it's much better. But why should I make their name sound good, right? The Democrat Party, radical left, they should change that too. Call it officially the Radical Left Democrat Party. Would drive our nation into economic and financial ruin very quickly. And they will take your guns away too, by the way.
That's the part that I wanted to focus on there. I mean, obviously there's the weird, ridiculous thing where he said the name wrong and then had to spin this fantasy of why he was saying
that
wrong.
That was smooth though.
Is it smooth?
Yeah, I mean, it was stupid, but he mispronounced it and then was like, oh wait.
For a person with Alzheimer's, it was smooth.
Keep telling me that I'm saying it wrong, so I've got to flip it. I feel like he worked quick on his toes there.
Yeah, and then the economic thing, you know, like forget the fact that they've completely exploded the deficit, added trillions, so the national debt, whatever, they don't care about that. And they're also going to take your guns away. So again, the immediate aftermath of a couple of shootings where at least one, possibly two of the people that we were talking about previously are white nationalists who are arming themselves to kill the sorts of people that Donald Trump and his movement don't like. The refrain is, they're gonna take your guns away. Forget the fact that Obama was president for 8 years, that he never took a single gun away. All of those worst fears and conspiracy theories have never been justified. But again, the fear, they're coming for your guns. Yes, okay, people who agree with me and you are going up and shooting up places, but the important thing is that you retain access to your firearms.
Right, which is so ridiculous. Like, I wish someone would have the energy to come out after a mass shooting and say, listen, we're gonna have to take the guns away.
Yeah,
I wish someone would say that. Like, I'm sure a lot of people who have lost their lives wish someone would say that. But the point is that nobody's saying that. Nobody is ever saying that.
Yeah.
Even Democrats often too much say, you know, we're praying for you. Our thoughts and prayers to these children, to these worshipers, to the, like, come on. This
yep, and that's what we saw in the wake of those shootings.
Nobody is saying
as well.
That. Right, exactly.
Exactly. Anyway, I don't want to burden you with too much of Donald Trump's rallies, but just get an idea of the sheer lunacy that's going on a daily basis there. With that, we're going to take a break. We come back, lots more to get to. Beto O'Rourke apparently has a plan when it comes to climate change. And so we're going to break down some of the details that have been released. We have been saying for a long time, there are a lot of candidates.
No plans.
No plans really, except for generally Elizabeth Warren. And we do try to talk about as many of those as we can. And if these candidates, one of the 50 wants us to talk about them, they have to let us know what they're actually going to do. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, why don't you talk about X if they've given us no, I'm not going to cover Stump speech. That's just not what I'm going to do. But he has a plan, so let's talk about it. It's a deal with climate change. The plan begins with proposed executive actions, including rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement on day one, and moving quickly to raise efficiency standards for buildings, cars, and appliances. Longer term executive actions include setting a net zero emissions carbon budget for federal lands by 2030, and adding more national parks and monuments to protect land and seascapes. My initial impression of those details is, weak sauce,
okay,
kind of. But there's
okay,
more.
Okay.
A bill that would mobilize $5 trillion over the next decade to upgrade infrastructure and spur innovation, including more than $1 trillion in tax incentives to reduce emissions and $250 billion dedicated directly to research and development. That again, okay, that's you're putting money behind it. That's good. All of this feels, at least at this point, other than creating more national monuments, which a lot of big companies in mining and oil development, stuff like that, they don't like. All of this feels like the market will fix it. Like we're gonna give them tax incentives, we're gonna throw money at them, but they'll figure it out. That's what it feels like to me.
It's like
what do you
too
think?
Not detailed enough.
That it's a market-centered
so
approach to dealing with climate change.
I, you know, honestly, it's better than nothing.
Uh-huh.
And what we have now are far too many people doing nothing, mm-hmm. still saying. So I don't know. This is, I think, I don't hate it.
You don't hate it? But again, we're not just, we can compare it to Trump, sure.
Right.
But we can also compare it to the plans that other Democrats are putting out. So let me give you a little bit more details,
okay,
to be fair. And again, this is not a bill.
Right.
But most of them aren't. That's totally fair. We're not going to try to be unfair in that way.
It's more Green New Deal-ish than an actual.
Oh, you mean in terms of the details?
Right.
Because in terms of philosophy, like, I consider it very different than the Green New Deal.
I think because people are confused about what the Green New Deal is. Like they think it's like a specific bill of one thing that's going to go into law. And it's really like.
It's like a mission statement with
exactly.
supplemental information. Mm-hmm. So one of the plan's goals is to guarantee that the US becomes a net zero emissions country by 2050. The framework proposes to work with Congress to set a legally enforceable standard in the administration's first 100 days with a goal to be halfway to net zero by 2030. Those are both fine. I mean, I might want to move up that second date a little bit, but at least it does have that as a goal that they say would be legally enforceable. We would need to know in practice what that actually means.
Right.
But this
okay.
does signal at least some commitment. And finally, the legislation would include a requirement that public companies measure and disclose climate risks as well as greenhouse gas emissions in their operations and supply chains. O'Rourke also said he would halt new fossil fuel leases on federal land. That I would want to see that said a few different ways because that implies that existing leases for mining and development and oil and all that and fracking would go on, which is of course not what we want and not what like Bernie Sanders was with Warren.
Right.
Exactly, it would stop new ones, which is something. So yes, I think all of this is better than what we have right now,
right.
Sure. But I think in some significant ways it falls short of those who are championing something more like the Green New Deal. This does not tie these policies into other related issues in terms of healthcare access, the economy, jobs, environmental justice, things like that. It does seem very heavily focused on providing incentives for massive corporations to fix the problem for us, which maybe will win over some Republicans, maybe. But I don't know, when I'm looking at like, he says he supports the Green New Deal, by the way, and then this plan comes out, which seems to fall pretty short of that.
That's my question, even, so I don't hate this, but if he supports the plan that's already out or the proposal, that I don't know why was this necessary. This seems like a waste. If you are going to come out with a policy, we've got so many options.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Elizabeth Warren was just talking about black birth mother like fatalities. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that he has so many broad, he has so many options that he doesn't have to double back on something that's already done that he says he agrees with.
Well, look, I think he can do his version.
Why? But then, that's the point.
Well, because, well, first of all, this is literally the first policy that he has put out in a detailed fashion.
Right.
Making it about climate change does at least signal a prioritizing of it, which is good. As a person who thinks that's the most important issue, I like that.
So as we talk this out, this happens often, we start to switch.
yeah.
But, you know, a lot of this is like, you know, essentially can be like boiled down to, we should have a committee study this and figure out exactly how this is going to happen. This is what we want. We need to have a committee figure out how to get there. Figure out, and
yeah, a little bit of it is not determined yet.
So we've already got something that's,
I mean, he
going.
Does talk about specific sums of money. Mm-hmm. That's something. Yeah, we are switching because now you're making me sort of defend. Like, I'm defending what is in it. I'm not defending it in contrast to Elizabeth Warren's public lands plan, what Bernie Sanders has said on the issue. Obviously, I would prefer if, I mean, like, okay, this is fine. I mean, I honestly, I would like to see like Merkley and AOC and others be involved in anyone's plan, but maybe that would happen. Yeah. We'll see. He would All have right. to work with Congress. So I think that this is better than Trump, better yes. than some of the other Democrats, almost certainly once they do come out with plans, if they do. Like, I can't say Buttigieg what he wants to do in regard to climate change. But I looking at these details, I don't trust him on this topic the same way that I would like an Elizabeth Warren. Or an Inslee, even Tulsi Gabbard's Off Fossil Fuels Act is, it's more concrete, certainly, it's an actual bill at least. So yeah, I will say this, release more plans, that's good. We're not gonna love them necessarily,
right, yeah.
but.
It's been really quiet for Beto, which have you noticed that didn't, mm-hmm. this was kind of like a, oh, that's right, he is doing this.
Yeah, Buttigieg threw sand in his face and is drinking his milkshake now.
right. But because when he was running his Senate race, everyone was talking about it every single day, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it was about Texas.
Well, I think so that the issue was
that he's kind of disappeared.
He kept getting positive press when he would climb things. I think he climbed something really high and got stuck up there for a few weeks.
God. I think people were
he didn't know how to get down,
putting his feet on the countertop.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, we are gonna take a short break. When we come back, Donald Trump's got a new favorite football player, and we've got a new co-host. Ricky Strom joins the Damage Report after this.
But not a new favorite.
Donald Trump has apparently been paying attention to the NFL draft and has a new favorite football player. Just coincidentally was number 2. Here he is talking about him.
I was watching the other night the NFL draft. Can you believe it? And it was the second draft choice. And he gets out. Bosa. And he gets out real. He's going to be a great player from Ohio State. And he's a MAGA fan. He loves Trump. He loves MAGA.
I'm gonna push past how angry the terminology they're used.
Make America
anyway,
great again.
He loves MAGA. Anyway, we have got Rick Strom of TRT Sports here. So,
hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Nick Bosa. Why is it that he went to the number 2 and is focusing on Nick Bosa? What have you discovered about Nick Bosa?
Well, I mean, there is merit when he says he's a MAGA fan. That's 1,000,000% true. The reason that we don't see a lot of tweets from Donald Trump when it comes to black athletes is because he hates them. Mm-hmm. That is also deemed with the word, as Samantha Bee said in her White House correspondence, not dinner, it's racist. So, you know, going back to eat, and like, look, it was great. It was phenomenal. If you haven't seen it, go to the DVR or whatever the hell you have at home that you can afford, obviously. So here's my thing with this. The Golden State Warriors, right? He disinvited them. They already weren't going. He goes after Colin Kaepernick. He goes after anybody. Speaking of, Colin Kaepernick was one of the guys that Nick Bosa went after, calling him a clown, along with the dumb racist rhetoric of Jay-Z being trash, Beyonce's music is trash, and Black Panther being the worst Marvel movie of all time. There's a pattern
Has
here,
he
and it falls
seen
in line
Thor
with Donald
2?
Trump.
Come on.
I mean,
Incredible Hulk. Come on, I love Edward Norton, but come on.
Well, I mean, Incredible Hulk is green, so I assume that that's probably a no-go as well.
Okay, I've only seen one of the movies that you guys just mentioned, it's fine. But just to point out how they're so disingenuous, what happened to stick to sports?
So true.
Mm-hmm. That's what Laura Ingraham says. That's what everybody behind Trump has been saying.
Shut up
that's
and dribble.
What he's been saying, right, stick to sports. And everyone on the other side has been saying, no, because if they agreed with you, then you wouldn't want it. And
right.
It's like, no, I just don't want to hear, you know, politics from an athlete. And now you're all over it.
Right. So this is intertwined with Donald Trump saying, well, you got to keep politics out of sports. Because look at the NFL, ever since those sons of bitches started kneeling, oh man, the ratings are down. You got to take politics out of sports. But then hang on a second. Nick Bosa's a MAGA fan, so we could talk about politics and sports. Mm-hmm. It's a microcosm of the sheer hypocrisy of Donald Trump's presidency.
Yeah,
and Nick Bosa's not just a MAGA fan, he's a little racist, okay? You can't be like a little racist or a lot of racist, it's, you know.
Right.
But it's gross. He's not simply a MAGA fan, which, I mean, I guess, same thing, I guess. Sorry.
Yeah, I get like a-
Can I go a little further on Brooke's point just to expand upon that? What?
Damage Report with John Adderola, we both keep interrupting him, sorry.
What's one?
It's not his show.
As long as he watches the language, you can continue.
It's not his show anymore. It's the Damage Report with Brooke and Rick.
Consider it damaged. Okay, continue.
Let's call it the Brick Show from now on.
So what were you going to say?
Well done. I mean,
okay, in that case.
All right, so look here, real quick. He liked his friend's posts, who are white people, that use the N-word freely in hashtags and also put hashtag rape and rape and pillage. Like, these are things that Nick Bosa is down with and condones. So the evidence is fairly clear.
So what I'm interested in is not only that Donald Trump has decided that this guy is great and worthy of him mentioning it at one of his rallies, but he did say he's number two, right?
Yep.
So who was number one?
Kyler Murray.
Okay, so tell me about it. Exactly. So it seems noteworthy. And is he better? Is he considered that he's going to have a better career?
Not comparable, because they're two different positions. Okay. Kyler Murray is playing the most important position in the National Football League, maybe in all of sports, which is quarterback. You dictate almost everything.
He also got drafted right into the MLB.
Very much so. He's the first player ever. This is in sports history. That he is the first player ever drafted in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft, the Oakland A's, and then also the first round, the number one overall pick in the National Football League.
And he went to the greatest school ever, the University of Oklahoma.
All right, calm down. Calm down.
Which is biased. Yeah.
And started at Texas A&M first, by the way. But yes, he transferred to the greatest school.
Hip to the game.
Yeah, very much so. So look, you would think that that would appease many sports fans and be like, holy crap, this guy's really good. Really good. But then, of course, no, he doesn't get a tweet from Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Suspiciously. I saw a sort of quasi-apology from Nick Bosa, just for fairness. We're going to read it.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I hurt anybody. I definitely didn't intend for that to be the case. I think me being in San Francisco is even better for me as a person, because I don't think there's anywhere in any city that you could really be in that would help you grow as much as this one will. I'm going to be surrounded with people of all different kinds, so I'm going to grow as a person. I'm going to be on my own. I'm going to grow up. I'm going to learn a lot of new things. It's exciting.
Can we just leave that up really quick? Because just two things about it just bother me so badly.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I hurt anybody. That is probably
not
my number
apology.
One.
It's not an apology. Yes.
It's not an apology.
Yes.
And then also, I'm going to be surrounded with people of all different kinds, even though, you know, people, you know, lots of Americans would like you to think it's not what it is, but you live in America, you already are surrounded with people of all different kinds. That's why your president is so mad every day.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, this is so stupid. I feel bad for the people of San Francisco.
I was very surprised that they drafted him, because he put out a video on his social platforms basically saying that liberalism has absolutely crushed San Francisco and that's the reason for the city's demise. So the fact that he's now going back and like saying this, eye-opening.
What do you think the reception is going to be like for him?
Look, man, Michael Vick was welcomed back and he sent dogs to their death sentence. So if you win, it really doesn't matter in sports. That's literally all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cover sports. I mean, you want athletes to be great and everything. Are you hoping that his career sucks?
No.
I'm just curious.
I'm not hoping his career sucks. I'm hoping that he actually does grow as a person. And it's like, oh yeah, like black people are cool.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, liberals are actually okay. Like that's what I'd like to see in the growth
I think
of a person.
I hope that without
we got to cut, unfortunately. I hope the same.
But it's
we'll
our
be
show.
Watching. It's not actually your cut. I was going to say thank you for coming on the show. I'm not going to now. Hey, Brooke, thank
Sweet
you
man.
For being here as always. It's great to have you on Mondays. There's other channels on the network. I can't think of any. So, 2OT Sports, thank you, Rick, for coming on.
No, John, great you're so
you
welcome.
I try.
I'm so sorry you got killed off in Game of Thrones, by the way.
We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.